Welcome to Just the Taste. I'm Scott Curry with Chef's Best. We gather to talk about the trends in marketing, retail, and production in food and beverage that are shaping the industry. We are joined today by social entrepreneur Patrick Matier. Patrick is founder and chief executive officer of Seal the Seasons. Seal the Seasons works with farmers on a state-by-state basis to freeze their produce in season and offer it year-round in local grocery stores. Patrick enjoys nothing more than produce mixed with politics. He got his passion for social justice working with Farmer Foodshare through the Bonner Leadership Program. At Farmer Foodshare, Patrick spent 4 years of college working within the community and food system to fight hunger. He studied political science and economics at UNC, incubated Seal the Seasons at The Cube, and served as vice board chair of the Chapel Hill Carrboro Human Rights Center. In the fall of 2014, he studied social entrepreneurship at Watson University in Boulder, Colorado. In his free time, Patrick loves to hike, ride motorcycles, and is trying to learn to make everything he eats from scratch. Patrick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott.
So we just read a little bit of background and of how you came to where you are, but I think what's missing there a little bit is why you're doing this. What was a moment that you kind of had this aha moment, of all the possible directions you could have gone? When did you kind of see an opportunity here and decide to take this leap?
Yeah, so for me, it all started back in college working at the farmer's market. I've always, loved the American dream and the idea that anyone in America can, set out with what they're passionate with and make a living from it. And there's really no one that does that better than, the farmers in our country. People who live off the land, grow our food, and reliably bring that food to, bring that safe, delicious food to our mouths, every season of the year. It just happens without fail. And it's an amazing thing to see. So back when I was working at the farmer's market, I got to really get close to a lot of these growers and learn their story of how they started their farm and what's keeping their farm going and what's keeping them going as people. Just one example is Mark Lyon here in North Carolina. Mark, his farm has been in the family for over 100 years. It's a centennial farm. Actually, it's a bicentennial farm. It's been in farmland for over 200 years here in North Carolina. And, Mark had people lining up at his farmer's market booth every Saturday morning at, 6:55 before the market started to get his heirloom tomatoes or, buy his amazing sweet blackberries. They're very different than the blackberries you might get at the grocery store. They're how blackberries are supposed to taste. And, Mark was doing a great thing and, was able to feed his family, but, when there were problems with the crop, when there was a rainstorm or, root rot or maybe a fungal disease, Mark didn't really have any alternative market to get the crop out of the ground, get it away from the problem, and still recover some money, from his field. We talked with Mark for a while and, realized that if he had another place to, reliably sell his crop, he could keep his farm, more profitable and in the long run, keep that 200-year-old farm still in the family. Farmers have tried many things. They've tried CSAs where they sell to people every week. They've tried roadside stands. They've tried to partner with grocery stores. But farmers, they're growers. They produce our food and they do an amazing job at it. They're not necessarily salespeople or logistics people to know how to distribute product. So, we decided to found Seal the Seasons to help the farmers with stuff that they weren't as good at in building those relationships with the grocery store and helping tell their story and market their crops and do it in a local way to connect them to consumers because that's what consumers really want and what they've been demanding.
So let's help just draw the distinction here between the different types of farmers that are out there. There's what I think is called big agriculture, right? And tendency obviously is to demonize that a little bit. Some of it might be warranted, some not. Nonetheless, it you know, feeds an awful lot of people. And then you have small farmers as well. Share, if you will, from your perspective, kind of the difference between the two, the role that they play in our food system, and you know, kind of painting the picture a little bit more about what the farmers are that you align with, you know, acreage, everything, you know, everything, how they approach things. Just paint that landscape if you can for us, because when you hear farmers, it's like, what does that mean?
For sure, for sure. So for us, in the very beginning, we started focusing on only the smallest of growers. And that's because we wanted money to stay in the local community and, you know, really to keep money with our families, keep that money going back into our economy, and keep it within local business. That way, you know, people in our local community have more opportunity. There's more jobs available. And it really just helps real people. Now, what we found over time is that, you know, there's plenty of real families and real people running larger farms as well. And by partnering with them, we can help the really small guys. So now we really just try to partner with family-owned farms that, you know, that money is being kept in the local community. It's being kept by, you know, real Americans that, you know, participate in their local governments, that, you know, have jobs for their community. And that spend that money back in the same local community. We don't want the money that our food from our food to be going to, you know, Wall Street bankers or, you know, big corporate entities when it's going to end up, you know, in the Cayman Islands somewhere. Our goal is really to keep that money local and keep, you know, keep benefiting the American economy.
And you know, say there's probably a few problems, right, that you're solving here. One is, nutritious, delicious food. I can attest to, we have our little strawberry garden in our backyard here, and the strawberries we grow, and trust me, I have no expert qualifications that would allow me to grow good strawberries, but when we pick them and eat them, we're just, oh my gosh. I mean, just the fleshiness, the flavor of them. It's completely hungry. Different. Yeah. That said, we still buy strawberries at the market because we eat a lot of them and we make smoothies and so on. But I tell you, when we do get them in season out of our garden, you're reminded of what the difference can be. But help me understand a little bit. So there's that challenge, right? Bring in higher quality food to the market, higher quality across pretty much every definition of it. But you're also, as you illustrated, solving the challenge of, you know, farmers that are susceptible to, you know, weather. I think it's hard for people to appreciate how difficult agriculture can be. They're also susceptible to market forces that are out there as well. How big are some of these challenges that you're solving on that end? Said, I think we acknowledge the challenge of nutritious, delicious food. Tough to quantify, but how can we quantify, you know, how many small farmers are there out there like this? How much food is potentially wasted, if you will, or not brought to other individuals? And, you know, how much monetarily can be returned to some of these small farmers as well? Help paint that bigger picture there.
Yeah. So let's focus on strawberries and continue, you know, with your train of thought here. You know, the strawberry season in North Carolina is about 4 weeks. It's only about 3 weeks in New York State and Michigan. It's only about 3 weeks as well, or even Ohio. So, you know, strawberry farmers have a very short time to, you know, make the money they need to make for that year for their families. And if, you know, if something bad happens, that can really hurt a large part of the season. So, you know, even talking about North Carolina this past strawberry season, we had two major rainstorms that came through during the middle of the week and really just, you know, made the crop wet, made it soggy, and made those strawberries very difficult to harvest for the market that weekend or to be sold in wholesale to grocery stores. And so what Seal the Seasons is able to do is we're able to partner with those growers and watch the radar, you know, quite literally, watch the rain. And when farmers see the rain coming, they will give us a phone call, tell us they're harvesting the crop in advance of the rainstorm, packaging the crop for us, and then shipping it to our freezing facility. And this gives the farmers flexibility that whether the rains come in the early part of the season, the middle of the season, or the end of the season, you can capture those berries and get them out of the field no matter what the fresh market's looking for. You know, usually the fresh market gets really hot on the weekends when the farmers markets are and when the grocery stores, people are there buying product. But during the middle of the week, they don't have much demand for their product. So we're able to fit in there both with gluts to the market and with those rain events so the crop can be saved. And that, you know, that can be, for example, with these two rainstorms last year, you know, that could be as much as 20 to 30% of that crop.
Wow. So how many freezing facilities do you have?
So Seal of Seasons, we do everything on our model is locally grown, locally frozen, and locally sold. So we've split the country up into seven different regions. And within each region, we do all those things, you know, in locally. So we have about 7 to 10 freezing facilities right now across the country that we partner with. And originally we did that freezing ourselves when we were just here based in North Carolina. We realized that, you know, instead of us doing that work and employing those people, you know, it's better that we, you know, use the farmers and their infrastructure and their labor force to do that work as well, to freeze and package the product. And that gets more of our dollars back into the local agricultural community and back into agricultural jobs. So really just following our values, we've decided to partner with the growers, use their freezing equipment, use their facilities, and leverage that so that, you know, the one larger farm that has those equipment, has that freezing facility, we can connect them to other farms that don't. And those farms can ship, you know, ship the smaller guys can ship their stuff to the bigger guy. And we can all, you know, get it frozen in that way.
So I'm really curious here how on earth you're doing it, because if you look at a traditional business, let's just talk about a widget maker, right? So what do? You get together at the beginning, you know, prior year, and you do your budget planning for the next year. And part of that is revenue. So you look at things, right? You look at the market and you say, well, there's going to be a high demand of widgets and we can produce, you know, 500,000 widgets. So let's allocate the resources that we need to produce those widgets. You know, looks like there's a couple other companies making widgets these days. So we're going to charge $5 a widget. And, you know, you start up production and you hope that your widget factory can produce the 500,000 widgets over a 12-month period. And that leads to X amount of revenue, right? I mean, that's business planning 101 there.
Sure.
So if yet you have no idea how many widgets can be made, right? You are susceptible to said market forces, weather forces, you know, could be, I'm sure that there's a lot of others. It's almost like, to use the widget analogy, you don't know what the future year is going to be until those things happen and your phone rings. And then all of a sudden you have to decide how to run a business based on, oh, wow, we have a lot of widgets this month we didn't expect from this area. But from this area, there's no widgets because, you know, growing conditions were perfect, market forces were perfectly aligned for small farmers and whatnot. How, and I imagine that you outlined all this during your incubation, you know, stage with Q, but how are you running a business where inherently your job is to come in when unforeseen things happen?
That is a great point. And what we fall back on is our excellent operations team and the people that work here at Seal of Seasons that make it happen every day. Alex, Eric, Kirsten, Rachel, they do an amazing job in partnering with our growers and making sure we get the volumes we need each year. We work with several growers in each region to source each crop. And that gives us some redundancy that if You know, if the Reeves Farms up in New York has a really good year and they're able to sell most of their strawberries, and we're not able to freeze as many from them, we work with, you know, Pell Farm in Connecticut to make up for that lack in strawberries from Reeves. And that way, you know, we always get the amount of crop we need. And the farmers also see us as a kind of a hedge. Even if they have a really good year, they want to sell us product and be, you know, keep us as a customer, because farmers are really smart. They know that they're going to have a bad year in the future, and they're really going to need us that year. So we want to keep and maintain a relationship. Even if they could have made a few extra cents selling those strawberries somewhere else, they know that, you know, in a year or two, they're going to make a lot more by selling to Seal of the Seasons than selling that product where they can't sell it. And that's really going to make up for it.
And at retail, how are the price points compared to, you know, other options in the aisle?
Yeah, so our local products are between 15 and 20% more on a per ounce basis than, you know, Dole or, you know, another major competitor. We believe that, you know, with the offsets to carbon emissions, with the quality of our product, and with the knowledge that, you know, the money you spend on our product is going back to real people in your community, that really makes up for it.
Right. How have retailers responded? I know that you're in, you know, a vast number of stores. I mean, it's, you know, you got Meijer, Albertsons, Whole Foods, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll get into where you can purchase a little bit. But have retailers expressed any concerns relative to what I expressed? I mean, your ability to fulfill demand. What about like replicability? Because for better or worse, you know, it's assumed that when I go buy strawberry and it's, you know, it's labeled something, that when I go buy it in a month, it's going to be the same thing, right? Again, for better or worse. It's almost like we attempt to remove the element of surprise sometimes. Are you able to maintain any form of replicability, or are you embracing that? Yeah, it might be a little different. This season might be a little different because these strawberries are going to be from Michigan. Last year, they were from North Carolina because of that storm. Let's embrace that. Any concerns around that from retailers?
Yeah, so retailers are primarily concerned about our ability to fulfill product. You know, they know that we can only source local products once a year. And, you know, with our brand promise, we're only going to sell local. Working with Meijer in Michigan, for example, we only sell them product from Michigan, Ohio, and Wisconsin. And we make sure we source enough every year to, you know, freeze and keep in stock for their grocery stores. That's always been a large concern. And when we first started the business, I had mentors tell me that I can never short a grocer. I took that very seriously. And to date, we've never missed fulfilling a PO and getting grocers a product they need. We know that they cannot have empty shelves. So it's a very important part of our business is sourcing enough product. The product does change though. You know, year to year, Michigan, they're always Michigan strawberries or Michigan dark sweet cherries. But depending on the weather and depending on how the harvest goes, there might be a very slight difference in taste or even change in variety. You know, we found that some strawberries freeze better than others. And so I think we've been able to upgrade our product per se and just better fit the, you know, the frozen nature of our business. So instead of freezing Camarosa strawberries, we might be freezing Chandler strawberries. And getting into that level of detail so that we're getting the consumer the best possible product is really important to us.
Amazing. Farmers just must be thrilled when you reach out to them with this opportunity for them. Talk about regions a little bit. So obviously you got going to North Carolina if perhaps no other reason, it was in your backyard and you have the local resources there. How is your approach differing, if at all, you know, across the nation? You know, we're here in Southern California. There's different forces here. You have the Midwest, you know, you have, you know, New England and Florida and so on. Are there any different approaches, or is it fundamentally the same?
It's fundamentally the same. We do, you know, partner with different types of people. Sometimes we partner with a manufacturer who has been in the business for 30 years and they're very experienced and they teach us a lot. Sometimes we're partnering with a farmer that has never, you know, packaged a product before, and we help them source a packaging line. And, you know, we're really helping train and teach them how to put frozen fruit into a poly bag in an efficient and food safe way. So, you know, we see ourselves as collaborators, whether it's with the farmers, with the farmers who are manufacturing the product, or with our grocery stores. And we really keep an open and collaboratory approach, because we found that, you know, even though someone might not be doing what we need them to do today, if you know, set the right expectations and lay out clear communication, people, you know, like being a part of this system and like the story. And also everyone, you know, we design our system so that everybody makes a little bit of profit. If not everybody is making profit, then the partnership isn't going to work. So it's really important to us that every step along the way, this is a good business decision for the farmers, for the people picking the crop, for the people transporting the crop, packaging the crop, and, you know, for our grocers selling the crop as well.
So right now, you know, you have blueberries, you've got California sliced peaches, North Carolina strawberries, and so on. What about vegetables? Are you against vegetables?
It's great you bring that up. We feel really blessed and have a lot of gratitude for the Kroger company. This past year, a few months ago, back this summer, they awarded us a $200,000 grant from the No Hunger, No Waste Initiative. It's part of their innovation fund. And that grant was to launch locally grown frozen vegetables down here in the Carolinas. So we've partnered with six or seven different growers, and we're bringing to market six different frozen vegetable products, which will roll out March 1st in Harris Teeter, Lowe's Foods, and Ingles. Some of our historical customers and really great partners to us, we're really happy to offer them frozen vegetables, frozen local vegetables, and be the first people to have it.
Wow, congratulations. And, you know, good on Kroger for offering you that opportunity. Well, it says here, you know, since 2000, 21% of small family farms have been forced to close their doors. And you certainly seem to be, through just a wildly innovative model, you know, at the very least helping to stem, to push back on that. You know, I think we all know that any small business are just more susceptible to all sorts of forces and you know, they're riskier, right? There's just not, you know, maybe as deep extended lines of credit. There's, you know, maybe not millions in cash in the bank and whatnot. So I think it's amazing what you're doing. You know, for small farmers. And go ahead.
I think we're part of the solution. I hope that we're, you know, a way to show people that, you know, balancing the food, balancing the people in the food system, and balancing the profit for companies, you know, all three of those have to be aligned to really have a positive economic system for humans. And, you know, our food system has been really pushed towards profit for larger companies and larger corporations. And if we want to build a food system that, you know, really works for everybody, not just the corporations and the companies, then we need to balance out the human side of things, make sure people are being treated fairly, make sure that we're trying to work through a more collaborative partnership. And then, you know, obviously make sure the food tastes great. And for the consumer who's consuming that food, you know, they're getting a really nutritious diet that helps them live, you know, a really fulfilling and happy life. So, you know, we're a part of the solution, and, you know, we want to be, you know, publicizing and sharing these values. And, you know, really thank you for having me on today. but it really it's going to take the whole industry to, you know, focus their business and rethink how they do things if we want to, you know, create the right food economy for the United States.
That's right. Yeah, you said it's reinventing the food economy, so it works for everyone. And I assume you'll tackle healthcare after this, right, Patrick?
I see to our president on that one. It's a very complicated issue.
It is. Well, but you know, it takes, you know, I think everyone wants a magic wand, right? Sweeping change. You know, obviously, I was only half joking there about healthcare, but it's food industry is equally complex, and there's a lot of inertia behind it, and a lot of that inertia is good. Some of it has moved us in ways that I think are regrettable, but you can't just pass a law. You can't just change one company. It's going to take a collaborative effort, and you know, it might be 10 more companies like you or 20 more companies like you, and each one of you touching little parts and little corners of an industry, and you know, continually working your way towards the center until, you know, hopefully we wake up someday and it's completely evolved, and we look back and we just saw it as a journey that required evolution, and along the way, and not, you know, a right or a wrong, but just part of it. So I think it's amazing what you're doing. The number of areas of our society that you're touching in a positive way through a for-profit business model. I want to make that clear. You're B Corp certified, but you are a for-profit business model. Yet proof that you can do that and still, you know, move the world forward. So I think it's absolutely amazing. I want to make sure I mention to everyone that's listening where these products are, because, and I'm sure I'll miss some of them, but I think it's important for people to understand the breadth of which this is, that it's not just regional. You got Food Lion, Meijer, Ingles, ShopRite, Safeway, Albertson, Save Mart, Harris Teeter, Wegmans, Whole Foods, Weaver Street Market, Kroger, Jewel Osco, Lowe's, Lucky California, Kihi, The Fresh Market, one I'm not familiar with. I hope I say it right. UNFI.
Yeah, UNFI. They're a distributor in our industry. They help move products from manufacturers to places like Whole Foods or your local co-op. They play in a really important role in the food system. And in the industry, we talk about them a lot, but I don't think the average person would give distributors or UNFI enough credit, or just, you know, the logistics and our trucking system in general. Truckers play an incredibly important role, and we're really thankful that they're there and that they do a great job. We have incredible logistics partners here at Seal the Seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's we take for granted and need to express gratitude for how an apple ended up in our kitchen. It's incredible. The effort that's required for that, and I don't think we're grateful enough for that individually and collectively as well. Is there anywhere that I did not mention that this is available, that your Seal the Seasons is available?
If you're in New York City, we're in plenty of the bodegas and the small shops around there. We work with another great distributor, McMahon Farms, in that part of the country, and we are coming very soon to the LA and the Pacific Northwest market in the natural sector at your local co-ops and your other you know, natural food grocery stores. You'll be seeing Seal the Seasons pop up all across the West Coast in the coming months.
Awesome. I'll be looking for it. And do I imagine that a lot of folks, you know, I think that frozen fruit right now, I'm guessing here, but I don't know, these might be my own habits. A lot of times when I buy frozen, it's to, you know, make them into a smoothie or something like that. You find that a lot of folks are buying, but actually, you know, letting them defrost so they can enjoy a good, delicious, perfectly ripened strawberry in that way, as opposed to, you know, buying frozen and kind of using them for a, you know, I'm not trying to demean smoothie usage here, but that's my perception. How are folks purchasing and then using them at home?
Yeah, so smoothies is probably a majority of the use case. But we hear all the time people adding our products to their cereal, adding it to yogurt and granola, or adding it into their oatmeal for breakfast. I also add it sometimes to vanilla ice cream after dinner. Have a little treat, make it have a little more flavor, make it a little bit more healthy for me, or at least feel better about it, you know? honestly, on cereal or in a yogurt parfait is my favorite way to enjoy them. And, you know, because our farmers freeze the crop so quickly, the blueberries, the cherries, the blackberries, especially, man, the blackberries, especially in New Jersey, off of Brian Jewell's farm in southern New Jersey, when those defrost, you wouldn't even know they'd been frozen. It's incredible the work Brian does and the care he takes in bringing those blackberries to market.
Well, you have me salivating. So folks can find you at, online here at sealtheseasons.com. They can also find you on social media as well. Am I correct?
Yeah. And I'm glad you highlighted that. We're rolling out a brand new social media strategy this coming year in 2020. If people are looking to get more involved in their local food community, they're looking to see interviews from farmers. If they're looking to learn more about their local farmers markets and the details behind their farmers markets, we're going to be doing a lot of interviews and storytelling to bring the local food system to our social media and help consumers and help people get involved in their local food system. If you've ever wanted to go U-Pick on local farms, but you don't really know where to go, if you've wanted to get involved with your local food bank or food insecurity work, or just advocating for, you know, the right government policies for your local farm, we're going to be sharing events where you can go and do that and, you know, get with other people who care about local food and really get engaged with your community. So, you know, follow us on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter if you're looking to find out that sort of information, because we're going to be sharing a lot of that come the new year. Hmm.
And also on the website, you can track your fruit. So you can actually see the farmers that are there. And I know that you're working with the Carlsbad Strawberry Company, which is right down the street and kind of a rite of passage here in San Diego, is to go pick your own strawberries there. Nice. So it's great that you're partnering with those good folks as well. I think most people in San Diego are quite familiar with Carlsbad Strawberries, and they are delicious. I can attest to that.
Jimmy's a great partner out there. We love working with him.
Excellent. Well, Patrick, thank you very much for joining us. It's an incredible business model. I can't imagine the leap of faith that it took you to do so, but sounds like you are more than off and running and you know, expanding in the vegetables, and you have a long way to go to expand is what it sounds like. And certainly every step that you take in that expansion is a good thing for everyone. So thank you for that. And thank you for being on the podcast as well.
Thank you so much for having me on, Scott. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining us on Just a Taste, a Chef's Best production. Join us again next time as we talk to more experts in marketing, retail, and production in the food and beverage industry. You can always visit us at chefsbest.com to learn more.